Welcome to Emil Franzing's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
At least we think so.
Amen.
Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzing's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander in Tucson, Bunker de France across the way. He's still in Tucson.
Yep.
Different zip code, though.
Yep.
And Todd Roberts in the Los Angeles area. Howdy, sir.
Different country.
All right, gentlemen. The truth is out. Yes.
Yeah.
The truth is out. I'm not willing to share it.
Okay.
But it is out there.
Okay.
And let's proceed with the show and try to offend as many people as possible.
First of all,
I think we'll do that anyway.
Well, first of all, we've got to acknowledge the state of California as the resident of prune pickers, which means that Todd is our resident prune.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I said to the doctor that I've been talking to,
that would be Doc Brown, frontier proctologist.
Yeah, and well, I've told the story in the past. I told the story about the cowboy shooting matches that I've told you the story about Doc Peabody, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Who had that egg beater? It was kind of a shiny gold egg beater,
right?
But he put a juicer blender
type attachment.
Yeah, at the end of it, he'd walk around and spin it real hard, and he had this cackly laugh, and he'd say, Doc Peabody here, free proctology exams.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, it would freak some women out. They'd go running.
Rightly so.
That thing every single match.
Yep.
But I was talking to my doctor, the rheumatologist, the other day, and I was saying, well, you know, what is this medication going to do to me? He said, well, you know, Todd, it could slow you down a little bit. I said, oh. Well, you mean I'm not going to run as fast? He said, no, other parts are going to slow you down. I said, oh. He said, don't worry, Todd. Just make sure you eat an apple. I said, Doc, I got bags of prunes in my fridge. He goes, oh, you're not going to have any problems. You'll be fine.
And that that crash that you heard while Todd was talking was a clap of thunder that hit nearby here.
Oh, I thought it was one of Tucson's drivers hitting another car.
It could be.
Yeah. Well, the difference is you can always tell a prune eater just like you can tell a snail.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a trail.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Clean us up here.
All right. So let's get us going here. Originally, we had Rob Word from Word on Westerns to be our guest today. Unfortunately, he had a medical deal that he had to consider and deal with. So we're waiting for him to finish up that medical deal, and we're right on the hospital bed there, just waiting so we can have him on the show.
Show him up so we can have him. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll have him on when he's feeling much better now.
Oh, he'll be full of sass and vinegar. Yeah.
So in other words, what we're doing today is.
Oh, more thunder.
Listening to the thunder and yeah. And the picture that I used is for today's promo was of a bison, but I suggested that we'll buffalo our way through this somehow.
Okay. Yeah, you're full of buffalo chips.
I know it.
Well, let me just remind you, looking at our photo of today's show, the moniker of today's show, it reminded me of the great John Dillinger, who once said that a jail is just like a nutshell with a worm in it.
Yeah.
The worm will always get out.
Yeah, it will. And he was good at that.
And that was several weeks before he bluffed his way out of the Lake County Jail in Crown Point, Indiana.
Yep, and he did the same thing in Tucson when he was arrested and was held in jail there. He was arrested at the Congress Hotel. And they do a reenactment of that.
Yes, they do.
I don't know if they're still doing
it.
Because
still doing it.
One of the major proponents or major cast members of that passed away a couple of years ago, and so I'm not sure if they're still doing it.
Well, they're still doing it. Okay. It's gotten to be it's bigger than it ever was.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah. You know, celebrate them.
Think about this. How many people are smart enough to take a bar of soap and a can of black shoe polish and make a gun up?
Well, there you go.
That's pretty smart.
I tell you.
I would say so. I would say so.
And speaking of guns, I wanted to welcome the latest member to the Alexander Firearms family. We have us a black powder signal cannon, 58 caliber, made by Kennesaw Cannons in Georgia. And taking it out tomorrow. My son and grandson are going to learn how to shoot this thing. Well, my son already knows, but my grandson's going to learn how to shoot black powder stuff. And so that's our latest arrival in the Alexander Firearms family here. We have Vic Timms, who is the big cannon. We have Tiny Tim, who is the small cannon. We have the mortar, who does not have a name yet. We have this one that we're going to call...
Mortimer McSnur.
Maybe. We're going to call this one, in South Park episode watchers, you'll know this, Timmy! Yeah.
You know what? You should take them all out and let your grandson go, stand by for a broadside! Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anywho, so... Welcome, Timmy, to the Alexander Firearms family.
Don't point that thing at me, Harry.
Oh, it's got the rammer in there.
Yeah,
it could shoot, though.
It'll get me right between the eyes with the rammer. Yeah,
it's a cute little piece.
I heard there was a woman in a bar once who said, "No, I'm sorry, excuse me. We'll move on."
All right, what do you got, Bunker?
Well, you know. I know everybody out there was just waiting with bated breath for Bunker's Bunkhouse, the good, the bad, and the bovine. Well, somehow or another, the bovine got out of the pen. Because I got here and I opened up my little bag that's got all my verbal goodies.
Bovine stuff.
And it wasn't there. And I had it. I had it in my grubby little hands.
They escaped the corral.
But I am going to do one bovine event. That's... Oh, there we go.
Got to play Uncle Alvin's tune, man.
Yeah. Anywho, I'm going to just do today. This is November 22nd, 2025.
Yep, that it is.
It's raining in Tucson.
Marks this day in history, folks. Yeah.
It may not happen again for another 20 years.
Who knows? I mean,
now, yeah. I do have, though, a piece of... information for folks here in Tucson that enjoy going out and looking at Indian stuff, whatnot. There's an American Indian event coming up. Actually, it's two of them. There'll be the American Indian Heritage Craft Show, which is November 28, 29, and 30th, and the American Indian Arts Expo, which is January 26th through February 15th. Of the year 2026. Mm-hmm. It's an official event from the Tucson Gym Show. There will be at those events champion hoop dancers at 1 and 3 p.m. daily. It's open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. It's located at 2830 South Thrasher Avenue. It's kind of an adventure to get out there, but that's part of the fun. And it's a free admission, although they will accept donations. If you want more information, just go to usaindianinfo.com or call, as Charles Heller likes to say, at the speed of a pen, 520-420-4332. I've been there a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's a very laid back, relaxed event. It's almost like going out on the res to some kind of little res thing where the public has been invited.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get the feel of it. It's not full of all the glitz and glamour, mm-hmm. and the hustle and being hustled.
And speaking of Native Americans, I wanted to bring up a post that I saw from our good friend Jerry Geronimo, who has since moved to West Virginia. Yes. God knows why, but he did.
Well, I noticed there's been a lot of scalpings in the air.
Anyway, he brought up this post that I thought was rather appropriate. The Republican Party was founded in 1854 by blacks, white people who did not like slavery, and by Native Americans.
Abolitionists.
Yeah. So I think that is most interesting. These people were able to get along with one another, and that's how the Republican Party came to be.
And think about it. There wasn't a Democrat in the bunch.
Thank goodness.
You know, that's one of the things that gets me. You know, the Democratic Party likes to celebrate the fact that we're the party of the people.
Yeah.
They were the party that held the South down for almost 100 years.
They were the party of slavery. They're the party of
Jim Crow.
You know, don't get me started on that, because
the party who opposed the Fair Housing Act,
yeah.
The party who opposed
Civil Rights,
the Civil Rights Act,
yeah.
And the party who opposed the Voting Rights Act. Yeah. Let's also remember, and I know we don't like to do politics on the show, but Harry, you called the ball and opened it, so let's go. The longest filibuster in history was 47 days.
Oh, my God.
Jimmy Stewart.
And
what
that was
Strom Thurmond.
That was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Gene Autry and Claude Rains.
Yeah.
Jimmy Stewart directed by Frank Capra. But that's not what we're talking about. The real-life longest filibuster of all time was 47 days, and it was caused by Democrats who were filibustering the Voting Rights Act. 47 days they stalled the vote.
You got it.
And you know how the vote happened? Because a Southerner, Lyndon Baines Johnson, went to all the Northeastern Republicans and said, in honor of President Kennedy, you have to pass this. And they did. Thank you, Democrats.
Okay. We have a moment of silence.
Yeah, we've already had it.
That's because I want to throw up. It'll take me a moment to do so.
Oh, my watch is going off. It's telling me that congratulations. Well done. Apparently, I've reached a milestone here, or a millstone. I'm not sure.
Or a gallstone.
Anyway.
You've run out of bourbon, Harry? Is that what that watch tells you?
By golly, I'm looking at my bottle and it is gone.
Huh. Okay.
All right, so let's move on. We don't really have any particular topic.
I do.
Bunker always has a topic.
I'm the topic guy.
Okay.
Well, go ahead. You had something to say.
I'm waiting on you.
Oh, okay. Well, this is part one of the topics I want to talk about.
How many parts are there?
You'd be surprised. Anyhow, this is a silent movie from 1906. Actually, they called it movies back then, but it was really, by today's standard, a short, because anything under 50 minutes is considered a short. But back then, they didn't know that, so it was called a movie. And it's called The Life of a Cowboy. And it was released on June 1st or 2nd. It's not clear. It was 17 minutes and 21 seconds long, black and white, silent. It was produced and distributed by Edison Manufacturing Company, and the director and producer, or actually the director and the cameraman, was Edwin S. Porter, who also did The Great Train Robbery, and also possibly cameraman Wallace McCutcheon, which that's an interesting man. If you want to find out a lot of history about silent film, this guy had a very prominent place. The cast consisted of no name.
Hmm.
I did find out the location. It was shot in New York on Staten Island. Now, the basic storyline is a cowboy gets involved in a kidnapping and rescues a pretty girl. That's pretty much any B-Western anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The theaters showing the film would have added a narrator to explain what was happening, because back then in those days, a lot of times they'd just jump from shot to shot, and unless you had an active imagination, you were going, what just happened? But and I watched it, and I had no trouble following it.
Hey, it's only 13 minutes.
No, it's actually the I go by the longest version that.
Oh, okay.
That you do it by, and I saw them at 16 minutes. I saw one 13 minutes.
Okay.
And if you look up some of the ones that you can see, you know, they're not all the same way.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyhow, where were we here? Oh, here we go. Yeah. Porter, the director, considered this to be the first Western. He called the Great Train Robbery a crime picture, and I will say this is a must see for Silent Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tag. That's the tag from the Brainerd Daily Dispatch in Brainerd, Minnesota, in 1906. Now, there's some more other stuff.
Well, and you can find this. Okay, you can find live studio audience.
Driven in by the storm.
you can find this movie on the YouTube.
Yes, and it's a pretty decent print.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, what have I got here? I got some jotted down some notes while I was watching it. And okay, the trademark is Thomas Medicine. It's copyrighted in 1906. When it starts, opens up inside the bar. And what's so neat, the bar has all of these brands on the front of it, and they're big brands. There's a big set of Longhorns over the top of it. Synopsis provided by the Edison Company refers to the bad guy in this as a Mexican greaser.
Ooh.
Which is politically incorrect today.
Yeah,
but
who cares?
As I say, it was historically correct.
Yeah.
Then.
So, and you had some insight that perhaps Bronco Billy was in this?
Well, there. One of the, crossed off all the possible leads, and the very last one I came to, it listed Porter as the director. And it had a cast member listed, and I went, oh, my goodness. And it said, Gilbert Anderson, Bronco Billy.
Right.
And I went, okay, no, I see. Because I don't just accept stuff from face value. I looked up stuff. I looked up Bronco Billy Anderson, and I went through his complete acting list, his complete producing list, directing and writer list, and the acting stuff starts around 1903 or earlier. All of the writing, directing, and all the others are 1907 and later. So he definitely didn't have any of that to do with it. So I went to the infallible source, AI.
Ooh.
And I said, hey, buddy, you want to chat? And it said, most definitely, amigo. And so I said, did Bronco Billy ever work in a Western called The Life of a Cowboy, 1906. It comes back to me and it says, definitely no, Bronco Billy never worked on a film called Life. And, you know, I want to get, this is a spoiler alert for all you folks that are so enamored in AI. AI has every mistake that IMBD and Wikipedia has about the movies and has correlated them into one big mistake.
I'll give you an example. I was watching on the YouTube. I love to watch the History Guy, his channel, where he does vignettes, 10 to 17 minute vignettes on important things that happen in history. Well, he was talking about the Wickenburg Massacre, and which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
And the captions on it, where the History Guy is talking about it's in the Sonoran Desert, AI captions it the Snoring Desert. Oh, for God's sake, come on.
That's what people are doing right now, listening to the show.
You know? Oh, geez, really?
I have some more stuff.
All right, quickly.
Okay. It's possible many of the cast worked on the Wild West shows. If you see it, you can see why. As reference to the Big Horn Saloon is from the stage version of The Squaw Man, which was later filmed by C.B. DeMille.
Mm-hmm.
Porter felt film was more clearly... They felt that this film more clearly evoked the atmosphere of the Old West as understood by film audiences, and that's why he considered it the first Western.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll buy. We'll work into that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's just a matter of opinion.
I reckon so.
I think you, in so many cases, you could say they're both the First Western.
No doubt in my mind. All right, we're going to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts with you. We'll be back after these important messages. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were built. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and a hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
You're here to take orders, not ask questions.
All right. What are the orders?
Go to the Circle R and get rid of the owner.
You mean kill him?
What do you think?
I'm a dynamiter, not a killer.
You'll be one if you know what's good for you.
This job isn't to my liking, and if I do it, you've got to take care of me.
Don't worry. You'll be taken care of.
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. And the Yodeling Ranger there. Who was that? Jimmy Wakely, I believe.
I'm the Yodeling Stranger.
You're the Yodeling
Strange Yodeler.
Strange Yodeler. That too. Anywho, it's we're buffaloing our way through this particular episode because our guest that we had scheduled, Rob Word of Word on Westerns, is not available because of a medical deal. So
he's under the knife.
We'll get him when he
Hopefully
comes.
Hopefully he's out by now.
When he comes back, we'll get him. Not to worry, because he's a real interesting guy.
Oh, so that'd be a fantastic show. Yeah. Everybody that's ever listened to the show should listen in.
Well, and, you know, if you don't watch Word on Westerns and don't have it favorited on your YouTube stuff, shame on you, because you should.
He's kind of like a visual us, yeah. Only probably better.
Yeah, a little more polished than we are.
Yeah, a little more sophisticated.
Well, he's. I want to change the subject here.
Yeah, change it.
I've just decided.
Okay.
I'm going to share one of my favorite Bell Star quotes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A pair of six shooters beats a pair of sixes. So just keep that in mind.
Well, I can understand that.
And a pair of bloomers beats all of that.
I don't know that we get that in cards.
Or, unless no empties your check.
Well, you know, the strip poker.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Judge Isaac Parker once said, I've never hanged a man. It is the law that has done it. So, yeah.
That's a good quote.
It is, yeah.
I wash my hands.
See?
Pontius Pilate.
There you go.
Okay. You want to talk about the story of Ned Kelly Gang?
Oh, man, what an incredible story that is. This is, for those who do not know, this happened in Australia in the early 1900s, 1910 or something.
The movie is 1906, so 1906? It has to be late 1800s or
okay,
early 1900s.
Yeah. But Ned was a nasty boy.
He was kind of a Jesse James, Doolin, Dalton, all wrapped up into one. Yeah.
Man, oh man, yeah.
Anyhow, the movie was released, I should say, December 26, 1906, the day after Christmas. What a great Christmas present. And the original title was Ned Kelly and His Gang. Well, I don't know what the big deal on that. It was a 70-minute film, although it only, I think, like 12 or 13 minutes exist now today. But I've seen them, and they're very much worth watching. Black and white, silent. The director and screenplay was Charles Tate. And this is all, you might call this a Tate family production, because, I mean, part of the cast is, I think, every member of the Tate family. Directing, writing. The producer was W.A. Gibson. I'll get to him a little later. But this guy was a giant in Australian film. Mm-hmm. And Miller Johnson and John Tate, another Tate family. And Nevin Tate, another, they were the producers. The director of photography was Johnson. He was also one of the producers. And Ori Perry was one of the and Reg Perry, I guess the Perry brothers or father and son, I don't know what to connect. You know, I have no idea who their connection are. They might not even know each other for all I know. And the music was furnished by, you say music in a silent?
What?
By Eric Chapis. But back in those days, a lot of times they would write a score for these things. And the assistant director on that, because I know everybody wants to know who the assistant director was Sam Cruise. Whenever we got here. Now, the cast, we have Nicholas Brierly. He was Joe Berg. He was, I guess, I don't know if he was one of the lawmen or one of the gang. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Tate was Kate Kelly. That's one of the Tate family. Jay Tate, another gentleman, was the schoolmaster. Norman Campbell was Steve Hart. Godfrey Cass, no relation to Dave Cass, he's over here, was Ned Kelly. That's an important thing. Remember that. Joffrey Cass was Ned Kelly. Bella,
there'll be a test on this later, right?
Yeah, oh, there will be. Bella Coa, I'm just going to run through some names now. Will Coyne, I want to give everybody credit, was Joe Byrne. Crew, I've already mentioned him, he was Dan Kelly, he was a brother. Jack Enos was Steve Hart. John Forty was Dan Kelly, another family member, but not of the Tate family. And we had Vera Linden, Mr. McKinney. Mr. McKinney was Dan Kelly. I mean, he didn't have a first name. He's Mr.
Bummer.
Very respected. They called him Mr. Frank Mills was Ned Kelly. Ollie Wilson, Ed Tate, he was an extra. I guess he was one of the black sheeps of the family. And Frank Tate, they were kids. That's probably the family kids. The location was shot in Australia, obviously, in Eatham, Victoria, Heidenberg, Victoria, Melbourne, Victoria. That's the kind of like the state.
Mm-hmm.
Mitcham, Victoria, and Roseanne, Victoria. And then basically the story is of the infamous 19th century Australian outlaw or bushranger. It was filmed on the Tate family Charterville estate. See, even the even the family home was part of the movie. And originally, there was no intertitles, but like I mentioned on the other movie, narration by an on-stage lecturer who also produced the sound effects.
Interesting.
The first sound effects man, I guess.
That's interesting.
And what do we got here? Budget was £1,000 Australian. The original armor and helmet made by Ned Kelly were actually used in the film, so you get to see some historical reenactment that's really reenactment. And it traces the exploits of the gang of bushrangers and outlaws as they were pursued by the authorities. The budget in U.S. dollars was $2,250. Could you imagine shooting a 70-minute film today for that kind of money?
No.
I mean, it would max out your credit card.
And there were a number of those films about Ned Kelly produced.
Oh, there's a slew of them.
I mean, it was almost like
Jagger.
Yeah, almost like a series.
Yeah, that's a good one.
There's been two series.
And also, you know, of course, Orlando Bloom and Heath Ledger.
Yep.
That's a very good one, too.
Yeah.
You know, he was a real life Jesse James, and he was also intelligent.
Yeah.
You know, he thought ahead of the authorities pursuing him. And, you know, you can call him a criminal all you want, but that fella had a pretty thick noodle, as my mother would say.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is that just for 6 months, 60 people were involved in filming this, and they were filming around, what do they call? They don't call them states down there. What do they call them?
Provinces.
Provinces or something like that, yeah. Anyhow, that was called, so where they shot it was Kelly Country, and it was Strasburg Rangers, and that was kind of like a mountain area there. The peaceful and picturesque surroundings of Urea and Mansfield. In the backyards and paddocks of Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
So they were shooting in people's backyards.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Gibson, who I mentioned earlier, W.A. Gibson, the producer, is considered the father of the Australian motion picture industry. This is some of the cost on this. A production machine will cost £40. The stars on the film were paid $1 a day. Theater rental was for a few shillings a night. The director and screenwriter, Mr. Wilson was a director, a screenwriter. He was a concert, film, and theatrical entrepreneur. And this kind of sums it up here. Ned Kelly was a bush ranger, gang leader, police murderer, and local folk hero. And at this time, this was at that time the longest narrative film ever made at that time.
Like a Joaquin Marietta.
Yeah. And here's the funny, that's a great thing because, you know, it's like every time they caught a Mexican back then and shot him or hang him or whatever, they caught Joaquin Marietta.
Yeah.
He was caught and killed so many times.
Yeah. But,
yes.
I mean, the legends of Ned Kelly... I mean, I've read some of it, not all of it, but enough to know that, holy mackerel, this guy was pretty incredible.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, most of that stuff, it's not legend, it's documented.
True.
It's documented.
Yeah.
I mean, he's better documented than our album.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And this is what's so neat. It's a lot of people don't realize that the Bush Rangers, or you know, by that time, the Native Australians, they were actually virtually prisoners of the British Empire because most of them had come over indentured or as prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And the British government treated them that like they were still in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the Australian Western that I was watching. It's like two seasons. And it took place like in the 1860s, 65, something like that. But what impressed me the most was that they were using period correct firearms, not Colt 1873.
Peacemakers, yeah.
Yeah. They were actually using actual, of course they were probably Pietas, but. Fact of the matter is, they were black powder firearms,
accurate weapons,
and that's impressive, I think.
And the other thing too is, like, you know, in their film industry, you know, our film industry was not, shall we say, played fair with the American Indian.
Imagine,
yeah, but they treated their the Aborigines. Mm-hmm. They treated them with respect in yep. the films. They were given good storyline, yep. good acting, and I mean some of these things. There's a movie called The Proposition, Australian movie. That's about as dark a movie as you can get,
yeah.
and it's one of the great westerns of the world.
Yep. Check them out, folks. Yep. I mean, you know, you can find these things all over the place. Vimeo, YouTube, maybe on some streaming service. You never know. Just do a Google search.
And DVDs.
Take solace. Take heart in the fact that, as the great Daniel Boone said, I've never been lost. Well, surfing the internet, in other words, let me apply it to that. I have never been lost, but I will admit to being confused for several weeks.
Yeah, and he also said, D. Boone killed a bar under this tree.
A bar? Not a bar.
But you know what? You know what? I found out why they call him down under there.
Yeah.
Because they like a pint or two. So then when they sit at home and they put in the DVD and mm-hmm. they're watching a movie, mm-hmm. an Australian Western, mm-hmm. they've had about 8 or 9 pints. So by the time the movie starts, they're down under the couch watching it.
I like that idea, but I also enjoy my pints. So we're going to do our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. We're buffaloing our way through this one. Stay tuned. We've got more to come after this.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000 square foot clubhouse, 200 full service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Oh, and something else. You know, women down there can vote.
Vote?
Yeah.
Women vote?
Yeah.
Oh! That, it's times like these. It just makes me give thanks that I don't know how to read.
This is the Voices of the West.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you on this Saturday. Again, our guest Rob Word was not able to make it. He'll be with us after his medical thing, whatever it is.
Healing.
Yeah. And so we'll have him on, not to worry, because we want to talk with him as
yeah,
well.
Yes,
indeed. So we're, like I said, just bisoning, buffaloing our way through.
Let me interject this.
Interject.
John Dillinger was once asked what he did for a living.
Yeah.
He said, I rob banks for a living. What do you do?
That's a good question. What do we do?
We don't have an answer.
We are retired. Well, some of us are retired.
Hey, as much time as I put on research, I don't think I'm retired.
You're retired.
I'm retired.
You ain't making pictures anymore, are you?
No.
And I ain't doing radio anymore, are you?
Yeah,
am I?
Well,
no.
Todd's
still doing what he does, but probably on a real limited basis.
That's what his clients
are. Yeah, told. I have no idea what I'm doing.
So, there you go.
Well, you know, God, I told you yesterday, and I showed Harry today, the book I got from Boyd Majors, B-Westerns Remembered, Bad Men, Ladies, Sidekicks, More. And if you got a sidekick or a guy in there, give me a name, and I'll look him up, and maybe we can talk about
it. Oh, man, it's all kinds of things. Kenny Duncan, let's just go Kenny Duncan. Kenny Duncan, that's an easy one.
Look up the Duncan boy here. I'll have to look him up in the index.
Yeah, in the index or table of contents.
Well, while you're looking him up, let me just share with you, and I'm trying to offend all of our Texas listeners.
Oh, yes.
The great General William Tecumseh Sherman once said, "If I own Texas and hell, I'd rent out Texas and live in hell."
Okay, I found Kenny. He's got a whole page. Actually, got a whole page.
Page and a half.
And a half, yeah. Yeah. You looked, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Oh, you. I just smart. Figured.
Well, here, there's a picture here. I love this. Bill Elliott manhandles Kenny Duncan in California Gold Rush, 1946 Republic. Now, here's another picture down here, and there's a whole bunch of hombres. It says, Jack Randall holds a six-gun, while Kenny Duncan, Carl Matthews, Jack Perrin, and George Cheesebro, yay, restrain an angry Glenn Strange in Land of the Six-Shooters, 1940 monogram.
That was a good
and
one.
You don't want to mess with an angry Glenn
Strange. No, I think not.
No, no, you don't. No.
Well, let's see what they have to say here. And you guys interrupt at any time, or if I go too long, cut me off, because there's a whole book full of these
guys. Too long.
Oh, okay, well, cue pressure. And anyhow, good. Gene Autry called Kenny Duncan the meanest man in the movies.
Hmm.
For my money, Gene continued, he's the most convincing of all the bad men off screen. Kenny is a close personal friend of mine and nothing at all like the villains he played in 14 of my pictures. He gave them away. Now everybody knows Kenny's.
I thought the meanest man in the movies was Harry Cohen.
But that's okay.
Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Well, there's also the fellow over at Republic.
You know, they also said that about Roy Barcroft. But Barcroft had rolled into the studio on his motorcycle. he was like a kitten.
actually, the meanest men in the movies were the producers. They were so tight that
they're bean counters.
As my father would say, they squeaked when they walked.
Yeah.
They squeaked when they walked.
If one of them ever opened his wallet, which never happened because they were stuck shut, moths would fly off.
As one of my great mentors in the insurance business used to say, Des Lazat, that fella's so cheap that he squeezes those nickels so tight that Lincoln's crying.
Well, here we go. Is it veteran heavy Pierce Lydon? Well, what a great heavy he was.
Yeah.
Stated, Kenny was white-haired and handsome. The pictures do not do his looks justice. He was an expert marksman and in demand, making personal appearances throughout the South. They would show one of his pictures, then a music group would perform. Next would be Kenny and his shooting exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, that trick shooting act was filmed and released in 1949 as The Face, a 10-minute color short directed by the notorious Ed Wood, for whom Duncan did many films late in his career.
Wow.
Ed Wood, the best friend of a woman's knit sweater ever had.
Yes, Angora.
Well, and by the way, ladies, our lady listeners, please don't be offended. It's not that I'm saying anything dirty. He used to like to wear them.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He sure did.
Yeah.
Yeah, different individual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another quote here. Stuntman and Bob Steele double, Rex Rossi, and he was a hell of a stuntman, stated Kenny was one of the most enjoyable actors he worked with in film. Kenny's best friend ever over the years was Roy Barcroft.
There you go.
Kenny Duncan is my pal, friends on and off the set for more years than I care to remember. We used to gang up on the hero in the serials. Kenny is a hardened bachelor. He doesn't change much. To give you an idea of this, he lived at the same place for over 30 years.
Hmm. Well, now, Bunker, you did numerous pictures as a bad guy, as a good guy, as some guy. Yeah. you would... I don't know if you gravitated toward your other stuntmen co-stars or if they're...
We weren't co-stars.
Okay, but the other working guys. Working guys, the other crew.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you gravitated toward them or not, but or toward the actors or not. But, I mean, what's your perspective on all of this?
Well, first off... I got into the business because I could ride a horse. And so the people that, these were the people I already knew, you know, the cowboys, the wranglers.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the stuntmen, especially because I was doing westerns, were cowboys or they were horsemen. And so these were the people that I was comfortable around. When I was working the picture, I wasn't like today. I'm like a runaway tape, you can't shut me up. But back then, I was like the fly on the wall, and I'm thankful for it because I heard some of the most wild, woolly, fantastic, wonderful stories that these guys would tell.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish to God I'd either written them down or could remember them. But hell, I can't even remember what I did now. But because one of the things I found out...
I got your IMDb list here.
Yeah, an awful lot of the actors were as phony as $2 bills.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I observed right off the bat is these guys would come over here. Good, solid, married men. They'd get over here, and the first thing they'd do is they'd start chasing the girls. And because they were away from home.
So is this 1960s, 70s it's cowboys, just, or...
I'm talking about the actors.
That's what I'm saying. The 60s and 70s actors, because that's when you were in doing it. I guess you can't compare them to the 1950s actors. I know that you knew some of those 1950s actors.
I got to work with a bunch of them. A lot of them still were in their last days of working. And so I got to work with a lot of them. And all of these guys were just like these guys describe them.
Okay.
They were gentlemen. If somebody happened to actually recognize and remember them and come up and say hello, spend time with them and talk to them.
Okay.
And it was their job, and that's they were actors, but that was their job.
Mm-hmm.
The ones today. Well, I can't say for today, but what I see from the performances and the talk shows and stuff, I wouldn't want to be around them.
Mm.
They're so
phony,
self-fulfilling, and everyone's got a charity,
mm-hmm.
but they don't do anything. They're letterheads,
mm-hmm.
and it's the state of the industry. The whole industry is it's always been corrupt.
Yeah,
but. At least back in the early days on up through the 60s, even in the 70s, they still had some dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, then they talk about the old studio heads would be down on somebody and I'll ruin your career. Well, that still goes on today.
No doubt. All right, we got to do our final commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. We're just shooting the breeze or the buffalo stuff. We'll be right back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities
activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Well, if what you say is true and the sheriff tips off Hayden, you're liable to be dodging hot lead.
Just so long as I keep dodging.
We could lick the whole bunch of them.
Yeah, if they don't shoot Billy in the back.
Well, if they do, then we'll know the sheriff's in with Hayden and the rest of them. that wouldn't be a good way to get evidence, would it?
This is the Voices of the West.
A chicken farmer took a walk out on his farm one day. He paused by the coop as he went along his way. When all at once a rotten egg hit him in the eye. It was a sight he dreaded. Ghost chickens in the sky.
We're back on Abel Franzi's Voices of the West. I love this thing.
Chicken.
Oh, my God. Such good stuff. Such good stuff. Leon Troy, I mean, come on. You can't get any better than that.
You can't say we don't play the classics.
You know, I'm telling you, huh?
As my great, fabulous grandmother, Flora Mae Madden, said during a woman who raised five girls in the Depression on her own, it's always, always better to cluck than pluck.
I thought you were going to say a different word.
Yeah, and she,
you mother pucker.
And I said to my mom, I said, and what was the setting that led Grandma to say such a thing?
Yeah, you can't ask
and
that.
One of my earliest memories was looking out the back door of the kitchen and seeing Grandma take out the trash. And as she dropped the trash in the can, she'd turn around and come walking back through the backyard and grab a chicken. By its neck.
Yes.
And that chicken. And then smack it down on a stump.
Oh,
and
my God.
One of the girls, because there were five girls, my mother, the youngest, and say, whoever she could see, if you did, she didn't see you, she didn't call you, but if she saw you, oh, that's who God. She called out. And she'd say, there was Faye, Louise, Rita, Norma, and Lynn. And she say, so, you know, she called the name out and she goes, get out here and pluck this chicken so we can have some dinner and put yourself to use.
You know what's so cool about that? And I think it's only because of our age. Yeah. But I remember my grandma going out, but she didn't smash them down. She'd grab them by the head and then ring them. And then us kids would try to run them down as they took off without a head.
Well, she'd ring it. She'd ring it. Uh-oh. But just as a little bit of extra, you know, I just, you know, just to make sure that it was dead, she'd smack it down on that stump, running away. Body.
Yeah, break its leg so it can't run.
My grandma, they had a farm in southern Illinois, somewhere down near Peoria, I think. And she wouldn't do the chicken. She'd yell at her husband, who this was like a second husband or whatever. Sam, go get that damn chicken.
You know, just think. Now, this shows you we're a class show because we're going out on ringing chicken neck stories.
I know.
You can't get any.
Oh, goodness sake.
Also, remember that Grandma, we'd be sitting in the front room and watching television or whatever it was. And, you know, Grandpa wouldn't say much, but Grandma might say something. And then eventually, Grandma would get tired and she'd get up and you'd see her migrate towards the kitchen. And then she'd disappear, and then she'd come out of the kitchen and go towards her bedroom, and she'd have a little coffee mug. Mm. And we'd say, Grandma,
what you got in there?
What are you doing, Grandma? And she'd say, oh, sugar, I'm going to go to bed. Oh, what are you doing? What's going on there? With the car, you point the coffee mug. She said, "I'm gonna milk the cow."
Never know.
And then she disappeared.
Never mind.
And one time, one of us—I forget who it was—somebody took a little sip of that coffee cup of milk, and it was basically scotch.
Of course, 80 proof.
Yeah,
proof milk. Yeah, scotch with a little bit of milk.
Hey,
I'm going to go milk the cow.
You know, our elders did what we do, and our kids will do what we do, and their kids will do what we do. It's tradition. It's what it is.
Harry, they did it with a lot more grace and style.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I know.
Well, yeah, I was thinking what you're saying, and it's absolutely correct, except that we wouldn't be watching television. We'd probably be watching the fireplace.
And listening to the radio.
Or listening to the radio. Yeah. Most likely, yeah. Maria Dosa was watching the fireplace. Radio reception was...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
My grandfather used to watch a baseball game, and he'd call every single ball and strike. He'd say... He's gonna throw a curveball. That's gonna be a strike. And you'd watch, and it'd be a curveball, and it'd be a strike. And then he'd say, he's gonna throw a fastball, but it's gonna be a ball. And then it would be. And you know, you'd say, Grandpa, how do you know that?
I read the box score.
No, he'd be watching the game, and I, you know, and me being so full of myself, I'd say, Grandpa, how do you know that? He'd say, "Well, Todd, there was a time before I met your grandmother that I could play semi-pro baseball, and I was wildcatting." And I said, "Oh, so Grandpa, you were working on an oil rig, and you were playing semi-pro baseball." What happened? I met your grandmother.
I've heard that story. Yeah, they get all these old guys that start telling that story about their life and all this potential you see in front of them. And then you go, what happened, Grandpa? I got married.
Yeah, that's so true.
You get paid when you play baseball? We got paid 50 cents. 50 cents. I said, 50 cents a game? No, 50 cents a week.
Well, you know, the great Ronald Reagan started his broadcasting career doing calling baseball games.
That's right.
In Des Moines, Iowa, I believe. And, you know, hey, Dutch can do it. Anybody can do it, I think. I've had the privilege to call a baseball game, University of Arizona versus University of Southern California, and this was eons back. But, man, that was one of the epitomes of my broadcast career.
Think of this, though. Nobody could call baseball or football like Dizzy Dean and
Dee
Dee Reese.
No, never.
I mean, radio or television.
Never happen again. All right, that's it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Thank you for listening, folks. Next time we get together, it's the movie. It is Movie Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Next time we get together, it's Movie Saturday. We'll be out at the White Stallion Ranch. And our topic is going to be...
Zorro. Out of the West.
And you fool me with Brian, come the voice of
all of the Zorro movies and actors. So
and
that's,
the books, maybe.
Maybe so. That's
and
what's
the
happening.
Comic books.
That's what's happening next time.
Yes, 78, 79, 80 Zorro.
So long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.